Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Yellow and Blues podcast. This podcast episode we are recording just after the draw between India and Australia in the fourth and final test in Ahmedabad. I'm your host Srini Pasadi, and as usual I'm joined by my co-host Venkat. Hello Venkat, how are you?
Hi Srini, I'm doing very well, thanks. A bit jet lagged, but it's all right. I mean, you know, going and looking forward to another exciting week.
Yeah, thanks to you enjoying the sunny climes of the West Coast in the US. We missed last week's, but let's look at both the indoor test and the Ahmedabad test.
Of course,
two different pitches in contrast. One that was rated poor, and the other one, the Ahmedabad one, should probably also still maybe not rated poor, but at least average, given the draw that it dull and boring.
Yeah, I think there is a good pitch somewhere in between. It's between Indore and Ahmedabad is where I think most of the world cricket would be, played. I think, yeah, you don't need a rank turner, but at the same time, you don't need, dead rubbers as well.
It's interesting, all four pitches, in this series have produced a different, sort of, the Australian media, the amount of fuss they were making, pre-first test. If you look at the four different pitches, they've been so different in that format. The third pitch, the indoor one, is really what, you don't want to see, where it's a complete lottery between the two teams.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think in my view, the toss played a crucial part. And when the pitch is like really bad, it's rated poor. Let's put it this way. I mean, people don't like to use the word poor or whatever. I think it was a rank turner, bit aggressive in terms of its turn. And so it came to bite the host nation, which is India, at the back. So I think they quickly course-corrected, but swung the pendulum over the other side. But yeah, sticking with the indoor pitch, it was tough batting condition, as evidenced by the scores.
Yeah, I mean, in spite of all of that, I think we shouldn't brush it under the carpet just by saying India lost because it was a poor pitch,
Yeah, of course.
Australia played well, especially when you look at the fact that, India batted first and we bowled out for
109.
And Australia then batted second and scored, almost 200 runs.
Yeah. I think there was... The crucial is how much the middle order contributed. And I keep going back. And now we are seeing some semblance of middle order firing in with some centuries from the top order and middle order, especially Kohli, which we will attend to in the next section. But sticking on to indoor again, I think if you have a batting collapse and if your highest score is 22 in a test match, you're going to be really behind in that particular game. Whereas if you look at Australia's first innings, Khwaja batted beautifully. I mean, 60 in that pitch is nothing close to, it's 150 on a flat track. And they had stitched several partnerships, so that lead became really unassailable. And not only that, in the second innings, India failed again, So Shubham Gill scored low, Rohit Sharma, and you're almost opening with Kohli and Pujara with scores 12 and 5. And then, Jadeja. And the tail, which usually kind of rescued us, they couldn't do their job 16 and 15 and a couple of ducks. It's not going to help.
That said, again, it's easy to talk in hindsight, ifs and buts and etc.
Yeah.
But once India, we bowled out for 109, Ravindra Jadeja bowled Usman Khawaja, which was, I think it was Manas Labushan, isn't it?
Yeah.
He bowled with a no ball. And then also the fact that the two reviews that were burnt taking, because once he had bowled Manas Labushan off a no ball, he just then got on, he burnt two reviews. And then Usman Khawaja, I think this was Usman Khawaja, who was LBW, offered calling, and then India didn't take the review because they had two reviews.
Absolutely, that reminds me. Yes, I mean that you know, you get a feel when somebody gets out. We keep going back, and that I think we were talking on WhatsApp as well as to how big that this would cost, and it didn't cost us big because, you know, if you had Manas Labuschagne out at, like, he was like single digit, if I'm not wrong, or even like not. There's a huge difference. He had 30 runs, and that kind of gives time and partnership for, you know, Usman Khawaja to go on to make that 60. So, yes, I mean, the reviews look really hurried, shoddy. So we lost at the bowling as well.
Yeah, so overall, like, you know, yeah, you should be that, all of that said, again, you know, go back to my original point about, like, you know, we need to give credit to Australia, especially after the way they had collapsed in the previous test in Delhi in a single innings. And then it's sort of, you know, the whole test series, again, if it goes back and reminds the way it was when India won the Border Gavaskar Trophy in Australia, where our B team, you know, players going back, players getting injured and all of those things. In a sense, that's something you look at this, you know, in terms of Pat Cummins going back, David Warner going back. I know Ash Hagar really didn't do anything much, but, you know, in terms of also players staying here in terms of, you know, being injured for the first couple of tests, and Cameron Grimm, Josh Hazlewood going back injured. So, some couple of newcomers in, like, you know, Todd Murphy and Matt Kuhneman, all shining overall. Yeah. I think Australia, even though they lost the series 2-1, they'll probably take a lot of heart in terms of, you know, how their spinners performed, etc., from the series.
Yeah, on that track, they were better than Indian spinners at home, which is a huge confidence boost. I mean, I don't think this is the last that we would see of Kuhneman or Todd Murphy. I think they've got that, you know, just because of the way they have evolved throughout the series. Mind you, it's debut for a couple of them. So, you know, just talking about them with Nathan Lyon, you know, kind of towards his latter half of the career, I think they've got a really good spin pair, or at least a spinner in between Murphy and Kuhneman.
Yeah, I mean, talking of, like, you know, sort of flat years instead, we'll come back and we'll have a look at the Ahmedabad test, and then we'll come back and touch on kind of the WTC final and the road ahead for India. Just wanted to kind of, you know, just on that point, looking ahead, like, you know, sort of in 4 years' time when Australia come back to India again, the likes of, you know, Steve Smith, David Warner, possibly Nathan Lyon, etc., aren't going to be there. You know, it will be different. You know, hopefully the line will be led by these guys in terms of spin, you know, Todd Murphy and Martin Kuhneman etc. Obviously, Labuschagne will probably still be there.
It will be a totally different team. Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. India will definitely be a lot different. I don't know if... I mean, you're talking about Rohit Sharma, Chetisar Pujara, probably Kohli, Ashwin, Jadeja. I mean, there's a lot of people that we can count who are on the 33, 32-plus age bracket. And we are talking about 38-something for some of the players. It's going to be a completely new team, at least for India. But Australia have got some good pipeline. I mean, you have Travis Head, who is not very old. Khawaja may not play. Labuschagne, yes, of course. Cam Green. Alex Carey might be, you know, still around. Murphy, Kuhneman. Yeah, so they've got a good, you know, kind of mix and stable set of players. Whereas India need to find that. Probably Shubham Gill. It's a certainty.
talking of Shubman Gill, you know.
Shubman.
Obviously, he scored his century in Ahmedabad. We should talk about all the centuries in Ahmedabad. The big one, obviously, being, you know, King Kohli.
Yeah.
Back scoring a century. There's the unfortunate one, I guess, is Travis Head in the second innings missing out on a century, you know, out for 90. But otherwise, the four people who scored a century, Virat Kohli, Shubman Gill, Cameron Green, and Usman Khawaja, in some sense, you look at it and say, like, you know, two of them, Usman Khawaja and Virat Kohli, they've been there, they've done that kind of thing. But the new youngsters, you know, Cameron Green and Shubman Gill, both of them, you know, up and coming, they are probably the ones that are going to be around for a fair few while. The battles in terms of continuing, you know, I think it was in commentary.
Yeah.
Sunil Gavaskar said something about Shubman Gill saying, like, you know, the heir apparent for Virat Kohli. I don't know if he's the heir apparent, but definitely, yeah, Shubman Gill, I think, looks likely to be around for a few more years. So will Cameron Green?
Yeah, they both are talented cricketers. And I would say Cam Green even more so because he's got bowling. I mean, we talk about, I mean, there's a lot being written about how Akshar Patel contributes with bat and ball. I think I'm all for that kind of players. I mean, Cam Green, for example, can definitely bowl as well as bat. So I think there is a huge advantage. And mind you, Cam Green is scoring 100 outside of his home pitch against quality spinners in a tricky NW series, if I'm not wrong, as it, you know, bowling against, I mean, batting against India, at least the first game against India. So there's a lot more. Whereas Shubman Gill is playing at home turf, there is lots more advantages. It's a familiar territory for him. So I would rate an away century always more. And yeah, I would say Cam Green's century is slightly on the higher pedestal, slightly.
Yeah. That's definitely the one. I mean, Akshar Patel, you're right, you know, he scored a lot of runs for India in this series. I think he probably was the highest average, scoring 264 runs.
Yeah.
But if you look at it from a bowling perspective, he just got 3 wickets. I mean, India's bowling was dominated by Ashwin and Jadeja, 25 and 22 wickets. Whereas, you know, yeah, Cam Green. I mean, again, as a slightly, like, you know, disadvantage for Akshar Patel is, like, because he has ahead of him, so he had to prove his mettle from a batting perspective when he, like, you know, when you emerge as the top scorer. Yeah, there's definitely.
I watched the game today, the way Akshar Patel bowled. I thought it was brilliant because he was using the angle. He was like, I think there was a drop catch, if I'm not wrong, off Steve Smith, which was a tough one on Bharat. But I think it's something to do with the name that drops catches. But yeah, anyway, I think, you know, from our point of view, the bowling, Akshar Patel obviously bowled only 13 overs, for example, on the first innings in Indore. So, yeah, if you Jadeja bowled 3 times more, so 32. Now there is an argument which says, but his economy was good. I mean, I'm talking about Akshar Patel, whereas Jadeja bowled, 32, and Ashwin bowled about 20 overs. So, yeah, if you got, you know, two spinners, especially Jadeja and Patel on the same kind of bowling action, you as a captain, you know, you're going to be struggling to kind of go back to who needs to bowl, right? So, I mean, long story short, what I'm trying to say is, yeah, there is definitely the way Akshar Patel bowled today and throughout the series has been excellent. It's just a question of, you know, him getting a little bit of long rope, which I'm sure he will because of his batting prowess as well.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, there is like, you know, in terms of where India go next from that perspective. Obviously, the I was going to talk about like the WTC, look ahead and things like that. But I think one of the things we probably need to sort of give its own segment. We touched about it is like Virat Kohli is 100, obviously just coming after what 1200 days. Just over 3 years. The one thing that for me was like, because I started watching it right at the beginning, it was early in the morning and first day morning, it was very fidgety and very edgy when sort of playing with Sion.
Yeah, I know what you feel like. I mean, it's like, it sometimes gives you the, there is some, you get a feel that he was not settled. He was ambling. That's not Virat Kohli's innings. I think not a single six. And he scored only the two boundaries even after some was rank full toss or whatever. I think he was very circumspect in that innings. That just goes to show that he wanted to get the monkey off his back, especially in the test format. I mean, he has obviously scored in other formats meanwhile. But that matters to him a lot. And it's fair that he played it that way. There were murmurs about some quarters that he could have accelerated and put out. I don't buy that. In a test match, you're trying to save it, especially with series on the line.
Yeah. That's the big thing. I mean, that sort of innings actually reminded me of Tendulkar's double hundred at Sydney, where he put away the cover drive.
Yeah.
I don't remember, like, him playing a single cross battered shot till probably late, because that was his downfall.
Yeah.
In the previous innings, is like, playing that either the angled bat or the cross battered shot, as opposed to he kept it. Yeah, you're right. Literally, there was one whole session where he didn't score a single boundary. He just ran in singles and doubles, so he got most of his runs running single. And you're right, not a single six. He barely hit the ball in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. But
kept it grounded. And again, in terms of acceleration, so there's a few you could look at. Ravindra Jadeja's dismissal in the morning.
Yeah.
Yesterday morning, he was like, it was total complete brain fade. He was like batting easily. He hit one ball in the air and it fell safely.
Safely, yeah.
Later, he did exactly the same thing again. He played. It was like so uncharacteristic.
Yeah, I mean, especially for somebody who plays for Chennai Super Kings, you would assume these things are drilled into somebody's psyche. But I was watching that dismissal, couple of balls. I think he hit a four in that over. So there's no point of attempting that in that same over. You just need to shut up and know when to accelerate.
It just seems so such an odd thing. Obviously, from there on, in terms of that partnership between Kohli and Akshar Patel, again, lucky Akshar Patel, and then I think it was basically the dismissal of Akshar Patel and Ashwin straight after, and then the momentum was lost.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is a match I thought India would win. Go ahead, because Patel can play, and then of course he did, and Ashwin would have contributed a little bit more. Another, how much? Another 150? Another 70 runs, I think Australia would have felt the pressure. I think sometimes you need that score to put the pressure back. I don't think we had enough anyway.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, if you look at it now, you can probably look at it and say, I don't think even a 200 would have made that much of a difference. Obviously, the day before, I was saying, if India can get to 600 by before the end of the day, sort of 120 run lead, and then add a little bit in the morning and get it to 160, 170, I thought Australia might find it tricky. But I think having then subsequently looked at it today, you would think, it sort of feels the pitch if we batted for another or the match went on for another week as well, I don't think there would have been
not at that pitch. I think Australia also, I mean, see, the thing is Australia also played at 2.86 runs. It is quite a slow start from Australia. That ate up time, as well as India scoring at 3.19 for 700-800 minutes, really. So, you know, that was anyways ambling towards a draw by then.
Yeah, which leads us nicely into, like, you know, talking about the WTC final and the look ahead. And we joined by, like, a special guest on this podcast, you know, Dr. Sada, one of our what's the best way to put it? Somebody who's very knowledgeable and follows cricket, you know, with us closely, and as passionate supporter of an Indian team in terms of this, ideally a good time to bring in him as a guest on this podcast to look ahead for, you know, after the end of the India Australia series and Sri Lanka's defeat in New Zealand, which kind of sealed India's qualification for the WTC. Hello, Sada. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Srini. Hello, Venkat. Thanks very much for this opportunity.
Oh, brilliant.
Good description.
We are so thrilled by Sada's presence here. He can provide the alternative perspective towards some of the narratives that we've been setting over the past year.
Yeah, it's a good place to start. We were just finishing up, wrapping up the last two games, you know, test matches between the different in terms of how the indoor game finished and then how the one in Ahmedabad finished. And I was just saying, like, we could have been playing for another week in Ahmedabad. The pitch probably wouldn't have, like, took much more turn, and, you know, we would have still been, the match probably would have been going on, given how dull it was. Looking ahead to the WTC then, the first thing I was going to say was India are going to miss Bumrah, given he's not going to play the IPL. I don't think India will pick Bumrah for that. Obviously, the absence of Rishabh Pant, those are probably going to be the two big misses.
Yeah, I completely agree, Srini. I think more than Bumrah, I think Rishabh Pant, such a wonderful player. You would have seen his impact in the pitches in Australia, and similarly the World Championship being played in England. He will be a great asset for the Indian team, because coming down in the order and also taking control of the run rate and quickly scoring runs, not only the skills he has got behind the stumps, also the ability to score quick runs, will be a significant impact which we will be missing, I think.
And the banter as well, if I may add, Sada, between him and Australian players is going to be... I mean, his performances in last year, I think last year or the previous year, I mean, I'm so far behind. But anyway, the key thing is he was instrumental in India having a good show when they were playing in Lords. And I mean, he smacked down Jimmy Anderson. That would remain in cricketing memory for some time. So I know he's an impact player, but of course, Bumrah as well, you know, given the conditions that we are playing in, will definitely be a miss as well.
Yeah, I think the big thing will be, like, you know, this will probably be more in Australia's favour than in India. Obviously, Australia also, interestingly, like, you know, when India came in, like, a couple of years ago for the WTC final, New Zealand had got preparation by playing England for a couple of games, and then came into the WTC final, whereas India came completely, like, you know, off the boil, unprepared for this thing. This year around, I just think, like, you know, the India Test match or the WTC final is a nice preparation for Australia going into the Ashes. So we are almost giving, like, you know, preparation ground for them to prepare for the Ashes.
Yeah, it's one thing. I mean, if Australia does lose that game against India in WTC final, I'm sure they're going to take it out on England. And we will see how Baswell then plays against us. It will be interesting. But yeah, sticking on to India, it would be good for us to be able to win this game. I see it's not that easy now, because we are actually playing with our B team.
So let me put this to both of you guys individually then. If I were to say you as of today then, who would be your starting 11 for India going to that test match?
The starting 11 for the WTC, if you ask me, I would say Shubman Gill, Rohit Sharma. Then you got Cheteshwar Pujara, Virat Kohli. And then number five, you will have Shreyas Iyer if he is fit. Then you go on to go down like with the wicketkeeper. My preference obviously would be Rishabh Pant, but I don't know whether he would be ready for the WTC. He might be still out of action. We need to go how things goes with his recuperation. So then in that situation, I think Bharat comes in. Number six, then you have Jadeja, you have Ashwin, and then you got probably, I think in this condition, I think two spinners is enough and three fast bowlers will be required in English conditions. So definitely the three fast bowlers you are looking at is Mohammad Shami, then Mohammad Siraj, and obviously in his absence of Bumrah, then you are looking at either Umesh Yadav, possibly. So that's probably might be that my 11. I would like to hear what Venkat feels and yourself.
I would go for the same. I mean, Gill, Sharma, Pujara, Kohli. Yes. Iyer, I'm still very skeptical. He hasn't really done enough, I'm sure, with swinging conditions and bounce. He's got this vulnerability against short deliveries. So I'm just not convinced about him in an international scene. The rest all, I think Bharat has been really good with the keeping and he's good-handed batting as well. I think he whatever little he's played, I could see that he's got some batting prowess. And of course, Jadeja, Ashwin, Siraj, Shami and Yadav are somebody who I agree. Maybe I'll carry Patel, but that will become too much of spinners. It's a hit and miss, right? Sometimes England, especially Oval, does produce that slow, low wickets and turners as well. In that case, you know, I would even argue, I would play Jadeja and Patel. I know that's not going to happen, but yeah, it's a slightly left-wing thinking, I suppose.
Yeah, I think I agree largely with both of you in terms of, you know, Gill, Sharma, Pujara and Kohli, Bharat, Jadeja, Ashwin, Shami, Siraj, those ones. The only two places I was like thinking was like, you know, Iyer and Umesh. The options, if you looked at it, was, you know, either you bring in Surya Kumar Yadav, who will probably give you one-off test, like, you know, because of Rishabh Pant's absence, could Surya Kumar Yadav potentially produce it, you know, in terms of like rather than Iyer. And similarly, whether Umesh, yes, but Shardul Thakur, if he's available, like, you know, he would obviously add in terms of the batting strength. That might be the one, two things that I would look as Shami, Siraj and Umesh in terms of the batting wise, you know, it becomes very, very weak. You could potentially get in Thakur instead of Umesh and sort of just strengthen your batting. That's probably the two I would probably look at saying, like, you know, from a change perspective.
So nobody is giving a chance for Rahul.
Well, that's my question. I was about to ask you both. What do you think about Rahul at number five instead of Shreyas Iyer? Because Venkat, you said about the short ball technical difficulty with Shreyas Iyer. Why not Rahul fit in that slot? Do you think, both of you think that he can be given a chance at number five? I mean, I know he wasn't a great success at opening or number one or something like that. But what about number five? And I take the point of Shardul Thakur, very good point about instead of Umesh Yadav. But what about KL Rahul? Is my question to you both.
I think it would, if I go first, I'll say, you know, it's very difficult to prove his metal between now and then because there is IPL cramped. I know Sada is a big fan of IPL eroding the test cricket, but there it sits now. So KL Rahul cannot go back to domestic cricket and get those runs that is required, which Chhateshwar Pujara did last year around. So that becomes, I mean, how would you select him on a run of poor form? That's the question. It's just about him not having an opportunity to say to the selectors, hey, I'm back in the nick. I'm going to play. In that case, I would rather go with Surya Kumar Yadav, who can at least give you that acceleration, a quick 30-40 burst in the middle order, which is all that is required.
Yeah, just adding in, just because you mentioned about Chetheshwar Pujara going in domestic. Actually, Pujara is is coming. Is it Sussex is back? He's playing for, in terms of the county. But interestingly enough, Ajinkya Rahane is coming over to play his county as well. So there's an option to say, like, you know, rather than, you know, because I can't see Rahane really doing a lot in CSK. I know he's probably planning to come over here after the CSK stint, but there's another option. You look at if someone was actually here in UK prepared, getting used to the conditions, and it, rather than Shreyas Iyer, you know, and Rahane is someone you would probably, you know, go back with past history, saying someone who's delivered. KL Rahul, you can look at him at number five. I think Rahane is obviously a straight fit at number five. You know, that's because that's where he's played at, and it's an easy fit there. KL Rahul, in the sense of, you know, the I don't think the talent's in question. It's more the temperament and his ability to produce at times. And if he does, even everybody across the whole board with the Indian team, they're all going to go into the IPL. There is nobody who's going to go into domestic. So pretty much all of them are going to come with the form with a white ball form behind them, you know, into the test match. So it's no different for KL Rahul from Virat Kohli or Rohit Sharma or Shubman Gill or anybody in that sense. So if he does produce, for example, if he has an amazing IPL where he scores tons of runs, confidence wise, you know, you can pick him at number five and say, well, yeah, he can play at number five, because it's not like someone who's going to make his debut and we don't know whether or not he can do it at international level. He's done his centuries, you know, in England as well. So therefore, I think it depends on, you know, how he goes in. Does this experience weigh him down in the IPL, or if he like really has one of those IPL where he scores 500-600 runs, you know, then you think, well, yeah, KL Rahul's back in form.
Yeah.
Let's take him and play him in the middle order.
I was just going to say that. And also, he gives you a keeping option just in case, you know, Bharat gets injured. Because, yeah, so you don't have to carry an additional baggage in terms of additional keeper and all that. So, yeah, let's see how. I mean, Rahul has played really well in England. Last year, he was ace in some of the conditions. Maybe let's see how he goes in the IPL, as you said.
Yeah, I don't know whether India will go kind of, you know, I mean, with Rahul Dravid, I still feel we play a lot more safe cricket than, you know, probably in the Ravi Shastri Kohli era, where, you know, you took risks. Because you think about left field and things like that, you know, we talked about again Iyer, or, you know, in that place being Ajinkya Rahane, Rahul, or Surya Kumar Yadav. You talked about, touched about keeper, you know, Ishan Kishan. Can he play that role there? Possibly, you know, as a wicket keeper instead of Bharat.
Yeah.
Ishan Kishan, then you suddenly create this series. But I don't think Rahul Dravid's the kind of coach that will probably go that sort of left field decisions. He's probably like, yeah, this is my set team. These have performed. They have played. Let's give them opportunities.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. In where are we now? In March. So, yeah, obviously, for India, obviously, other than the three ODIs against Australia starting next week, it is going to be all about the IPL.
Yeah.
And we'll probably delve into the IPL, you know, in terms of doing a preview of the different teams, the strength and who's looking at it, you know. As usual, we'll probably spend a little bit more time on CSK, possibly Dhoni's last season. Maybe in the next few episodes of the podcast. Talking of the IPL, you know, one, we haven't done much in terms of the Women's Premier League. You know, we have not had a good look at it as such. I mean, just looking from the outside in, you know, first things first, this almost seems to reflect the IPL sort of thing, where Mumbai are the dominant team and RCB are the team at the bottom. I'm not sure, like, you know, well, more than, I guess, obviously, it's the players that do the deliver and do. But you've got to kind of go back, take a step back, you know, whether it's the auction and things like that. And talk about, like, you know, the team that's been put together, you know, they seem to, like, really pick the proper team, you know, which actually delivers, whether it's, you know, the men's or the women's. Because you think it can't just be, like, you know, a random or anything kind of thing. You look at it and say, the scouting probably is, like, really, really good.
Yeah, their talent hunt is quite good. And I'll tell you one interesting stat. Top five players, right, in terms of run score. You don't have you have only one Mumbai Indian batter, and who's scoring at 143. RCB, for example, has two women players in the top five or top six. Delhi has two. Mumbai Indians has just one. So you can imagine that, you know, it has been an all-round contribution from the batters, at least on that front. So yeah, I mean, let's see the polling as well in a bit.
What have you made of the WPL so far, Sada?
So far, I mean, yes, it's just early stages into the tournament. As you said, yeah, the Mumbai Indians are on the top and RCB at the bottom, and for some reasons, RCB are not seeming to click. Mumbai Indians have got a team combination, and I think the more importantly, the players are performing in the team. As Venkat mentioned, it's not about one particular individual. As a team, collectively, they have kicked off in a very good way into the tournament. So that's why they are at the top, as we see. And yeah, the other teams have got quite a few stars on paper, but I think they are not kicking off as expected. So time has to tell how things goes. I mean, having said that, Mumbai had a little bit of close run. I mean, not too close, but at least a little bit of challenge, I think, yesterday when they had to face UP Warriors. And once again, it showed that the teams like UP Warriors or Delhi Capitals have few named players who perform, and then once they are off, the others are all switching off very quickly. So whereas the Mumbai always have a knack of knowing how to come back, even if they have been taken for runs in the initial stages. So collectively, they perform well as a team, which is quite good to watch.
Yeah.
Overall, sorry.
No, it's good. You go on.
So in terms of, I mean, the things I want to say about WPL is, yeah, it's a good initiative overall, which is due for a while. I think it has kicked off now, which is good to identify the talents in the Indian cricket. The thing I have noticed so far is, it's early into the tournament, but what I have noticed is, the teams are not utilizing the Indian talent that much, is my feeling. Because if you see the players, some of them are only the players who are always known to us at the international level, who are always there and in the team and given chances. Even like even if Mumbai Indians are at the top of the table now, they don't seem to give enough opportunity for the Indian players who are in the team, except for one or two, like Saika Ishak. But yeah. There are few other names, if you could see in the team, and they hardly have anything to do. They are not given much chance to bowl, or neither they are coming to bat. The chase is being done by top four or five, and you see all the names which are familiar at international level. They are the ones who are sent to bat. And that is something which I feel is the teams should look into, because the purpose of WPL as such is to unearth the Indian talent. And yeah. At the same time, the franchise wants to win. That's fine. That's understandable. But that is something they need to look into, giving some more opportunities for the players, the Indian players who are uncapped players, and they need to come out in this kind of platform to perform.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say, you know, we have to give them some grace. It's the first edition. You don't have that kind of pipeline. As the WPL matures in terms of the players' visibility increases, you will have a lot more people who would consider playing cricket as a viable career, domestic talent. Now, we don't have that situation yet. It's just kicked off. As you said, Sada, it's a really good step in the right direction. You need money for anything to happen, and for talent scouts, and you see RCB or any other team, they built kind of pipeline from the domestic talent quite early. And so I think another couple of years, 2-3 years, 4 years, you will see the rise of people like Sykar Ishak and people like that, who is stopping the wicket taking now in Mumbai, and just that's a ticket to her national place, I suppose. Now, women's cricket traditionally has, you know, kind of dependent on national visibility, but now this will change with this, not only with WIPL, but you also have the 100, you also have the women's VPL. So some of the players that are well known have established and played in a lot of these editions, whereas it's still new to domestic talent.
Yeah, and I think you hope the likes of, for example, Sykar Ishak now, you know, whether not the 100 this year, but come the VPL next year, she gets an opportunity to play in the VPL and develop. And
yeah,
pick up the IPL, and I was just talking about the pipeline wise, you know, looking, we've suddenly got the Karnataka Premier League, Tamil Nadu Premier League, etc., at least on this side,
yeah,
where you can see the pipeline, you know, sort of people getting more opportunities. And that's whether you will get similar Premier Leagues kind of thing, you know, for the women's cricket, or not sure, I'm sure. But I think, yeah, you're right. In maybe 2, 3, 4 years, there will be some opportunities. And the other thing I think, so that you touched about is, you know, players, two things I wanted to touch overall was, like, one, there have obviously been some big scores, you know, like, you know, 200 plus scores, that which I don't think we've seen the Indian women's team in terms of, you know, in their international level, they haven't really scored. Now partially this could still be like, you know, the overseas bowlers, overseas batsmen actually bowling, playing against, like, you know, sort of not the standard of quality of bowling, you know, if you take a majority of the Indian and things like that, and being scored. But also the other point you made, looking at a lot of the results, there's been a couple of games which have been, like, you know, 10 wicket victories where the openers have completely, like, you know, demolished, I think, RCB and UP women, similarly Gujarat Giants and Delhi Capitals. But then similarly, there's also been a couple of games, you touched about the UP Warriors versus Mumbai Indians, against Mumbai Indians just for the loss of 2 wickets. Similarly, like, you know, there was again Mumbai women similarly versus RCB, just the loss of 1 wicket. So it does feel like some of the teams at least have got, like, a batting heavy right at the top or the openers. So it's basically like, you know, the rest of them don't seem to get opportunities at all, especially, like, you know, the Indian, you know, sort of batting talent that's come out. Just looking at the top 10 run getters, there's nobody other than, in, you know, from, there's about 4 of them from the top 5 only, like, you know, I think it was Shefali who was in the top 5.
Yeah.
It's all overseas. Similarly, like, you know, the remaining also, like, you know, Harleen Dion, Diol Harpreet, and Harmanpreet Kaur and Yastika Bhatia are probably in the top 10. But really nobody that's kind of broken through from what you would call the non-Indian,
yeah,
sort of players. The only in the bowling is the only one that you picked up, like, you know, Ishak. So there is a lot more. But on the other hand, I mean, from what little games that I've actually seen, there seems to be, like, you know, decent crowds coming in, and the fact that it's been completely separated from the IPL, you know, unlike the 100, etc., where the women's IPL is played totally,
yeah,
separate and is not dependent on the men's IPL. I think that's good for Indian women's cricket in the longer run.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry. I mean, no doubt. Yeah, it looks a success already, even though if it's in initial stages now. I think it seems to be attracting a lot of crowd, a good amount of people turning up and watching the game. And that's very good. That's very good for the tournament overall. Yes, I just want to reinforce, I mean, you look at the top 5 batsmen or top 5 bowlers, that is, like, only like Sykar Ishak, who is completely new overall for the international world, but all the other names are very familiar in the international world and they're all cap players and stuff. So that is something I would say probably the team should look into giving opportunities for the other players so that they could come and shine and they get a bit longer run. In Mumbai Indians, I would not see any of the bottom 3 or 4 having any contribution either with bowling or batting. And that is a little bit, you know, whereas RCB tried to give some opportunities, but they are not clicking altogether. So the team should look into that kind of opportunities being provided.
Yeah, there's someone, yeah, just looking at the bowling kind of, you know, really, there is nobody other than Saika Ishak in the top 10, you would say, oh yeah, this person is like an unknown, you know, that's come out of it. I mean, I'm just looking at it. Saika Ishak, Sophie Eccleston, Shikha Pandey, Hayley Matthews, Tara Norris, Amelia Kerr, Marizan Kapp, you know, all of them are like, you know, from an Indian perspective, you pick, it's Deepthi Sharma is there. Nobody else. I mean, again, Radha Gaikwad is probably another one. So you really, you're right. There isn't, up until the point you probably get to, like, you know, yes, Asha was probably way down, you know, an unknown Indian, you know, Shobhana Asha in terms of, again, I'm just looking at her stats, basically, she's 30 years old. So in some ways, you know, almost for her, it's more a case of like, okay, this is a good nest egg, this is good money in terms of that. Is she really going to make it to the Indian team? Probably not. But yeah, it reminds me of a few other, like, you know, Praveen Tambe is one that comes to mind from IPL, who's like came completely out of nowhere, and like, you know, and then there's another one, Mayank Markhand or somebody, never made it to Indian team, but completely came out of the blue and performed in some games.
The Rajasthan had somebody like that who was a hard hitting batsman. The name slips, so you can imagine. I think he played. I think he got a couple of caps for India as well. But there are a number of IPL heroes who never, you know, made it way to India.
I hear on the radio commentary on BBC, there's a guy called Abhishek Jinjinwala who does radio commentary on BBC. They introduce him as, like, you know, IPL batsman. And I still try to think, you know, where is he played for IPL? I just can't remember him in the IPL. But they always introduce him as saying, like, you know, a former IPL batsman, Abhishek Jinjinwala. He probably played for KKR or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Can't remember. But yeah. Fingers crossed. I mean, overall, the WPL, it looks like it might end up possibly being Mumbai Indians coasting through, and then Delhi versus UP.
The other question I just wanted to ask you both is, why you think that only 5 teams in WPL, why can't they go a little bit more and see whether there are some more players? Do you think that that's all we have got, the talent pool, the 5 teams, is it good enough?
I think I would say, you know, to start with, it is good. Probably if the demand goes another couple of years, they might expand to 7.
Yeah.
You need the pipeline, you need the investment, you need the sponsors, you know, you just need, everything depends on TRP. And frankly, there is so much cricket now. People are, the audience is fragmented. And if they are able to, unless they are able to, you know, kind of get the women population watching cricket, I doubt IPL, because the men audience in terms of gender would not, I think, on a long run constitute the audience. I mean, you need the, as does the players need talent pipeline, I think the audience also needs some young, fresh, you know, eyeballs. I don't think
the difference is, like, you know, when the IPL started, in men's cricket had, like, you know, 60 years worth of international cricket behind them, and almost 70 years. When was our first overseas test, I think, was 1932. And 2007, we won the T20 World Cup. And 2008, we started the IPL. So we almost had like 75 years worth of cricket, as opposed to the women's. They probably had, but realistically, you would say the last 10 years is really where Indian women's cricket.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, you know, whether the likes of CSK are looking at this and thinking it's an opportunity missed in terms of, you know, getting a women's IPL, women's PL team. It probably similar to how the men have gone from 8 to 10. This will also go from 5 to 8, I suspect, in another at least 3 or 4 years' time. You know, the talent pool will clearly, like, you know, become bigger, and there'll probably be more women wanting to play. And yeah, again, the you know, one of the things, you know, off air we talk about is in terms of a lot about how since that 2007 start of the IPL, you know, that's actually become a millstone around the men's team's necks, like, where, you know, it's kind of holding them back. I hope with the WPL, it goes the opposite way, like, you know, for the women. It actually, like, you know, gives them a far more exposure to international. Because I think Venkat and we, in one of the episodes, touched, one of the good things for the women is they only majority play white ball It's like T20 is really what they play, both internationally and this thing. So in that sense, you know, this is kind of just, this is what they really played, T20 and ODI. Whereas obviously the difference for the men between T20 and Test is like completely chalk and cheese. It's people say you can carry the skill over, but it's not the same thing. Fingers crossed for the women. I think this should be like, you know, if they can win an ICC event in the next 2-3 years, the WPL would have played a big part for them.
Yeah,
absolutely. No doubt about that, Srini. Yes, and you see the team, like the Australian women's team, so they are so strong, and you could see easily, like, you can see all the players performing even in WPL for the individual franchise. The gulf is very wide, if you see, compared to the other teams. Like, and that is what the WPL should focus upon and boost the confidence of the Indian players, the talent, and also unearth the talent and boost their confidence so that they could learn a lot from these players and just bridge and narrow the gulf and get closer and try to beat them in the major tournaments. And this should be the platform for it.
Yeah, 100% agree. Like, you know, that's where it is. You know, it's not just about the playing; it's how quickly these women in India also kind of, you know, Indian, the various franchises learn from those international stars, you know, off the field as well, and how quickly they bring it into their game and progress. It will make a big difference. So I mean, that's probably a good enough time to, like, round up this episode of the podcast. Thanks, Sada, for joining us and kind of, you know, giving us your views on the WTC as well as the WPL.
Thank you very much for the opportunity provided, Srini and Venkat. Thanks a lot.
We are hoping to see more of you, Sada. Hopefully, you know, you're able to.
Especially the IPL, you know, given Sada's interest in the IPL. Probably talk more about it, you know, as we go along, you know, get you more often on the podcast. For our listeners, as usual, are, you know, rate us and leave your reviews and comments on Spotify, Google, or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get it from. We are on Twitter at Yellow and Blues, so do get in touch with us on Yellow and Blues. Until next week, whatever you're doing, have a good one. Thanks from me, Venkat, and Sada. Goodbye.